shuttle, as you know, is off and running. Discovery lit up the sky. Boy, did it light it up. Late Saturday, blasting off for the first nighttime space shuttle launch in 4 years. The latest step in NASA's ambitious schedule to complete the International Space Station. The shuttle's fiery ascent turned night into day. Boy, it sure did for spectators at the Kennedy Space Center. A cloudy sky with blustery winds earlier in the day gave way to clear skies, a gentle breeze, and away she went. God, that's inspiring to see. It's inspiring for America to do. It's the whole thing is so inspiring for Americans. One of the commentators on the channel I was watching said it was reminiscent of going to the moon. And for those of old enough out there to remember going to the moon, it is, every time the shuttle blasts off, indeed reminiscent of that. And boy, should we be doing it again. What has happened to our effort in space? We've done a lot of work close to, in low Earth orbit, but that's about it since the moon. That's a long time. That's getting to be a generation. A generation. It just doesn't seem right at all. Now, I've got one hell of a guest coming up for you in the next hour, Jim Sparks. Now, he's a very special guy. He made all kinds of money in real estate, building condos, you know, that kind of thing. And then he began to be abducted. And he recalls, unlike so many abductees, he recalls all the details of his abduction. He can describe the aliens. He can describe what happened to him. He can tell us everything, virtually everything that went on, and why they did it, what their message is for us. All of that is going to come from Jim Sparks next hour. He's not just anybody. He's going to be really something. Outgoing Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld made a surprise trip to Iraq on Saturday. Didn't announce a thing. Just days after a bipartisan commission called the situation there, quote, grave and deteriorating, and said the administration's policy wasn't working. He's there to express his appreciation to the troops and thank the troops and the families for the sacrifices they're making. You know, that's kind of a sad message to the troops, isn't it? To hear a committee come out and say, it's just not working. Of course, when you're in the military, you don't really pay attention to all of this, not so much anyway. But you just do what you're told. In the military, you take orders and you do what you're told. That's that. So hopefully a lot of this is not making it to the troops there and demoralizing them in any way, and I suspect not. The 109th session of Congress, frustrated by partisanship and criticized for its meager record of any accomplishments, ended with a flurry of bill passing and promises of change when Democrats take over the House and Senate in January. Before the pre-dawn finish Saturday, departing House Speaker Dennard Hastert acknowledged that after 8 years, the longest stretch for a Republican in the job, he's going to welcome a return to the rank and file. Going back to sit on the bench with everybody else. The gunman who went on a deadly shooting spree in a downtown high-rise law office went to the building in search of an attorney, we now find out. Why? Because he felt he was cheated over an invention. Authorities said Saturday Joe Jackson, 59, made at least one other attempt to enter the offices of the intellectual property law firm Wood, Phillips, Katz, and Clark and Mortimer, but was turned away because he did not have an appointment. New DNA evidence proving that the driver of Princess Di's car was drunk on the night of her fatal crash in a Paris underpass in 1997, according to the BBC. The tests confirm original postmortem blood samples were from the driver, Henry Paul, and he had three times the French legal limit of alcohol in his blood. Wow. Three times the legal limit. Get this. The nephew of Saddam Hussein, who was serving a life sentence for financing insurgents and processing bombs, escaped from prison Saturday in northern Iraq with the help of a police officer. Sectarian attacks killed at least 20 people, including five who died in a suicide bombing outside a Shiite shrine in Karbala, Officers also found 39 bullet-ridden bodies in Baghdad that apparently were victims of revenge killing killings by Sunni Arabs and Shiites. So this is just absolutely awful. But to imagine, now what kind of security do we have that Saddam's nephew can escape from prison? What kind of prison is that anyway? I would imagine it would have been the most high security kind of prison anybody could imagine, and he escaped. In a moment, we'll look at some of the other news. All right, Lex, if you're listening, you might update the storm situation here in the Philippines. A tropical storm, Uthor, it was a tropical storm. Guess what? Overnight turned into a Category 3 typhoon. It is now a Category 3 and just about directly south of us at this hour, I would think, having ravaged across the Visayas area of the Philippines, and or is ravaging across the Visayas area. And we have, as a result, clouds, rain, a little bit of wind here. It is the Typhoon of the Week Club here in the Philippines. And I'm not kidding. Now, those of you who have been following the show, it really has been a typhoon a week for a while now. Literally, every week, a typhoon is born in the, out to the east of us in the Philippine Sea, or perhaps even beyond, and then just gains strength very, very rapidly and comes raging across the Philippines. And it's just a matter of where. In this case, close enough that we get a little wind, a little rain, but nothing more than sort of a blustery day here in Manila. Well, it turns out the government does have something to hide, but doesn't have anything to do with extraterrestrials, according to Stephen Aftergood, director of the Project on Government Secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists in Washington, D.C. A document has surfaced that has been stamped Top Secret Umbra, the code word for the highest, most sensitive category of communications intelligence, Umbra, U-M-B-R-A, Umbra. Wonder what that stands for. The once classified affidavit was originally filed by the National Security Agency, or NSA, in a 1980 lawsuit to justify the withholding of records on UFOs. The document is largely declassified now, with certain sections cut out, ostensibly to protect employee names and keep NSA technology, skills, and foreign connections out of the limelight. The document in-camera affidavit of Eugene F. Yates, Citizens Against UFO Secrecy versus National Security Agency, October 9, 1980, was released in redacted form on November 3rd in response to a Freedom of Information request from researcher Michael Radinsky and posted on the website of the Federation of American Scientists. A read of the document yields insight into how a super-secret agency like NSA became caught up in the UFO phenomena. Created in November of 1952, the National Security Agency, Central Security Service, is America's cryptologic organization. It coordinates, directs, and performs highly specialized activities to protect the U.S. government information systems and churns out foreign signals intelligence intel. Being a high-tech organization, NSA is cutting-edge home for communications and data processing, also center, of course, for foreign language analysts and research within the government. The just-released 1980 document seems to explain that a total of 239 documents related to UFOs, get that, 239 documents actually related to UFOs were located in NSA files. 79 of those documents originating with other government agencies. One document is an account of an NSA official attending a UFO symposium. So, NSA guys, I wonder which NSA guys get assigned to go to UFO symposiums. And the titles of NSA-related UFO documents that are noted in the declassified document are somewhat intriguing, such as UFO hypothesis and survival questions. Another title cited is UFOs and the Intelligent Community Blind Spot to Surprise or Deceptive Data. In this seven-page, undated, unofficial draft of a monograph authored by an unnamed NSA employee, the author reportedly points out what he considers to be a serious shortcoming in the NSA's communications intelligence, intercept and reporting procedures. That is the ability to respond correctly by suddenly coming upon surprising information or deliberately deceptive data. The unidentified author uses UFO phenomena to illustrate his belief that the inability of the U.S. intelligence community to process this type of unusual data adversely affects U.S. intelligence gathering capabilities. Within the pages of the newly released affidavit and between sections of excised copy, big healthy ones, it shows NSA intercepted in 1971 communications between two aircraft and a ground controller discussing a, quote, phenomena in the sky, as well as radar screen observations labeling what is viewed as unidentifiable objects. Other intercepted and decrypted reports of bright lights, luminous objects, unidentified aircraft, along with an elongated ball of fire scooting through the skies over non-U.S. countries are also noted. The 21-page affidavit makes it clear that release of documents for public scrutiny, that would be for you all of us, for a variety of reasons, quote, listen to this very carefully, quote, would seriously damage the ability of the United States to gather this vital intelligence information, end quote. Furthermore, how the NSA works with a network of foreign sources, organizations, and other governments to secure intelligence data would be, they say, adversely affected. Boy, wouldn't you like to get an unredacted copy of that? Big areas of blacked out blobs. But clearly, the NSA is looking at this whole phenomenon. Anything serious that they had discovered, though, would be redacted, big black blobs. Organic globules found in a meteorite that slammed into Canada's Tagish Lake, they now say may actually be older than our own sun. Wow. The ancient materials could offer a glimpse into the solar system's planet-building past and may even provide clues on how life on Earth first arose. We don't really look at this research as telling us something about the meteorite itself as much as telling us something about the origins of the solar system. According to Scott Messenger of the NASA Johnson Space Center down in Houston, most of the meteorite's material is about the same age as our solar system, in other words, about 4.5 billion years, and was likely formed at about the same time. But the microscopic organic globules that make up about a tenth of 1% of the object appear to be far older. In a study appearing in tomorrow's issue of the journal Science, Messenger and colleagues report that isotopic anomalies in the globules suggest they formed in very cold conditions, even near absolute zero. What's really striking about this is these globules clearly could not possibly have formed where the meteorite itself formed. Under those extreme conditions, the air in it, the air you'd breathe would be solid ice. You'd never find those conditions in the asteroid belt or anywhere else close to the sun. The Tagish Lake meteorite flashed across Earth's northern sky back in January of 2000. Most of the object burned up in the atmosphere, but pieces of it crashed in Canada's frozen, sparsely populated Yukon Territory, northern BC. It's the lowest density meteorite that we've ever seen, said Peter Brown, a meteor expert and professor at the University of Western Ontario in Canada. It's extremely friable. That's an interesting word, friable. Easily pulverized, and the material breaks up very easily. The object's fragile nature is one of the clues that led some scientists to theorize that Tagish Lake could be the most primitive meteorite ever discovered. By primitive, we don't mean the oldest chronologically, explained Brown, who's not involved in the science study. We mean that the material in this meteorite has been processed at least since it was formed. The material we see today is arguably the most representative of the material that went first into making up our solar system, our entire solar system. So that's pretty exciting stuff. In one image, a shining snake of light flows from a hidden spring into a crater's depression. An orbiting camera aboard NASA's Mars Global Surveyor, we just had interviewed somebody who does all the camera work, you'll recall, recently. Well, guess what, folks? They found water. They have found water. If this was coming down the slope toward you, this is a quote from NASA's Kenneth Edgett, a scientist with the space science teams, you'd want to get out of the way. This is the squirting gun for water on Mars. Not the smoking gun, the squirting gun for water on Mars. We've found it, said Michael Meyer, NASA's lead scientist on their Mars exploration program. Water seems to have flowed on the surface of today's Mars. Philip Christensen, a professor from Arizona State University in Tempe, added, "The discovery would change NASA's plans for Mars exploration, not to mention our understanding of the desert world itself." Now, no kidding. Water is the basis of all life. Water is also the basis of any fuel that you might want to put together or anything else you might want to manufacture. We really can't go to Mars without water. So if there is current water on Mars, and that's what they're saying here, that means that a trip to Mars is eminently more likely and will come much sooner. That's just amazing. Mars Global Surveyor, whose extended mission came to an end last month following a power failure, captivated the images while tracking changes in geography over a period of days. Dry gullies, previously thought to have held water no more recently than millions of years ago, were found to have filled between observations. Get that. These gullies actually filled between their observations with a spacecraft. So that means there's water on Mars now. And that really means, depending on the nature of the water, I suppose, we don't know all that much about it other than it is there. It's going to take another mission to find out, I don't know, how potable the water is, I suppose. And what we will have to do to make it usable, if anything. Maybe it's just fine. Maybe it's actually good water. Maybe someday they'll be selling bottled Mars water with special health benefits. I don't know. Anyway, it's exciting news because it does mean, ladies and gentlemen, that we'll be going to Mars. Now, here's a guy. You've got to wonder about this guy. This story is from South Africa. This fellow couldn't have thought real hard. A South African man has been fined $140, that's a lot of money in South Africa, for taking just 1 week off work, telling his employers that he was pregnant. Charles Sibindada, 27, apparently stole a certificate from a clinic during his pregnant girlfriend's checkup. A court near Johannesburg heard. He then added his own details to the note and submitted it and took 7 days off work, seemingly unaware that only women consult gynecologists. His employers became suspicious. They became suspicious and investigated the matter. On passing sentence, Magistrate Bruno van Eeden warned Mr. Sibindada not to walk around faking sick letters from gynecologists as if he was pregnant. This all according to the South African Press Association news agency. I like the part where it said his employers became suspicious as if somehow previous to that moment. Why everything was just okay, just fine. He had handed the note from the gynecologist to, the boss. And the boss had gone, "Well, okay. I can see you've got a problem here, all right. Take a week off." And then apparently, according to this story, some period of time passed before the boss and others in the company, I suppose, figured out that we shouldn't be pregnant. He's a guy. Now, how long would it take for a company to become suspicious on that count? You got to love some people's, I was going to say inventiveness, but there's nothing very inventive about this, is there?
Here is Art Bell.
Once again, coming up at the top of the hour, this is really going to be something, in my opinion. Jim Sparks, who is a real estate developer. You know, he did condos, he built properties, he was 34 years old, or probably is roughly 34 now. I don't know, we'll have to find out. Anyway, he has very serious, specific recollections of his abductions, plural. And what they want, why they did it, what their plans are for Earth, the Greys, and others. You're going to hear it all tonight. Should be very, very interesting. Let's go to the first wildcard line. That would be Yvonne in Manhattan. Hello.
Hi, Art. What a pleasure it is to talk to you. Thank you for taking my call.
Very welcome.
I wanted to know if you were planning to or trying to get the real Alison Dubois on as a guest.
Working on it. I'll tell you what, I found out that the, quote, real Alison Dubois is a fan of this show, and she very much would like to come on, and so we're actually working on both the real and the one who plays her part. We'd like to have them on together, and that's sort of in the works.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
That was it, huh?
I have a comment. Kudos.
You love that show or what? We don't get to see
it
over here. We don't get that show over here, and I miss it horribly. So I've missed the last better part of the year of that program, but oh well. Mm. Anyway, if that's it, fine. I'll move on.
I wanted to say something else.
Sure.
Kudos to your adoption of Dolly. She's so cute. And I heard somewhere that cats are like potato chips. You just can't have one.
Yes, that would appear to be true. Once a sucker for cats, always a sucker for cats, Yvonne. I just, you know, in Dolly's case, there you have to be out of your mind to have three cats in a condo. Just out of your mind. But there was no alternative. There was no way around this. There wasn't. There comes a point, if you're a cat lover, if you're an animal lover, where you just, every night we would walk past and she would run up, unlike every other Philippine cat, she'd run up and just rub up against me and purr and jump in my lap and is like, take me, take me, take me. You can only take so many days of that, and then finally you collapse and do the wrong thing. Or the right thing, depending on how you look at it. She's something else. And that photograph of her is perched on top of Abydos. Literally perched on top of. Let's go to the first-time caller line. It says anonymous abductee. That sounds interesting. Hello?
Hello, Art.
Yes.
I'd just like to say that I'm a great admirer of what you do, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
It's a pleasure to have you. You don't want to give your name, apparently.
No, sir. Or my location, please. But
okay. All right.
Actually, my experience goes back to my childhood. This has been going on for a long time. But
all right. I'll tell you what. We've got a very difficult phone connection. Move just a little bit away from the phone in this case, and it might clear up.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that any better?
Yeah, you bet it is. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, when I was 16 years old, this is a very uncommon fear for a 16-year-old young man, but I used to be terrified of getting out of my bed because I was convinced that there was a presence in there. I've always been obsessed with the subject of UFOs and aliens, and more recently, I've been obsessed with the subject of what the Africans refer to as the Chitauri, or what are referred to by some as the reptilians, the Anunnaki. But a recent experience that I had, a lot of these recollections appear to me almost in the form of like a memory of a dream. But in fact, what happened was I was abducted, and I was told that this has been happening repeatedly, through the...
Again, back away from the phone. My question for you, I want to stop you and ask a question anyway, so get further away from the phone. Do you think that you had a screen memory, in essence, installed? It's kind of a false memory of what happened?
I think that that would definitely be a possibility. But I was told that I was programmed, and I was told that I was programmed to kill myself and destroy myself in different ways. And that...
Oh, my God, why?
I think that they fear some kind of power that I contain, that I possess. But among many others on the planet right now, I believe that I possess the same power, this ability to change people's perspectives on things. And because of this, they basically hunt these people down and repeatedly abduct them throughout various points in their life. And I believe that I'm one of them, one of many, that I've been reading about in recent years as well.
This began how many years ago?
Well, I began having fears of this and feelings as though I was being abducted from the time that I was about, like, 7 years old. Uh-huh. And 6 years old.
And your age now?
I am 22 years old now.
22 years. Can you describe these creatures?
They are the classic depiction of what some refer to as the Greys. But I believe these Greys to be no more than drones, worker bees for a higher, more intelligent, more sophisticated race. I believe that essentially they're clones. That's why they lack reproductive organs as well. And in traditional depictions of them, they lack reproductive organs. I believe that they wear suits, and that what appears to be a gray skin is not actually a gray skin, but it is actually a suit to cover up their true form, which is more like the form of what we would call a reptilian. Or, what some refer to as the Anunnaki.
How clear are your recollections of what was done to you?
Some are blurred and some are very vivid, you know. As I said, some come to me almost, they seem like a memory of a dream, a very vivid dream.
All right, Mr. Anonymous, let me ask you this. You say it's blurred with the possibility of a dream. How much is there any possibility at all that all of this was a dream or a hallucination or something like that? Or are you certain it was real?
I'm certain that most accounts of this were absolutely 100% genuine. And
your accounts of this, not others.
No. I'm talking about my personal experiences.
Okay.
I wouldn't rule out the possibility of at least some, but I'm saying like, it's not like I wake up and remember a dream. It's like flashes of images come to me. And over the years, through my research, it's like I'm almost deprogramming myself and realizing certain things and uncovering certain truths. When I uncover things that I already felt and I hear about other people's opinions on things that I've already felt and intuitively come to as an understanding, then I begin to have a realization that I'm not the only one who's experiencing these things this way.
Oh, you certainly are not. Listen, the guest I've got coming up tonight, in order to recall everything or to get every bit of information, went to John Mack, the renowned fellow who regresses people like yourself. Have you done anything like that? Have you gone to any researchers?
No, because to put it simply, I think that the human mind is a very fragile thing, and I don't like people tampering with mine. And if there are indeed outside alien forces tampering with it, that's enough. You know, I have enough problem keeping my mind balanced as it is. So, especially with a certain knowledge of certain things that are happening in the world and going to happen to Earth.
Like what, please?
Well, of course, you've heard of the idea of 2012, which will indeed happen when it's supposed to happen. The idea of martial law being enforced, complete global...
Well, back
control.
Up. What's going to happen in 2012? I mean, I don't know of anything specifically said to occur then. It's the end of the Mayan calendar. Maybe they just got sick of making calendars. What do you know about what will occur then?
Well, some propose that, I know that there will be a great cataclysmic shift, which will bring about, like, some kind of ascension for some humans that are ready for it. And some will have to be left behind. This is a shift in dimension for the Earth. And in fact, from my understanding of it, from the information that I've received through opening myself up to it, basically what will happen is there's a planet where these beings, these reptilians, have been harvesting all these humans and keeping them there. When this change comes about, these beings will actually become the people of ancient Earth. and they will start everything all over again, because essentially understanding the concept of time being one, past, present, and future being one, then essentially time travel is pretty simple when you don't look to any device to help you to travel through time, and you only rely on your astral body, so to speak. Now, if time is collapsing in on itself and the past, the present, and the future are all one, then this is not necessarily a totally ludicrous hypothesis. It's a definite possibility that these people will come back and become the people of ancient Earth, and they will start everything all over again, and that it's just this grand cycle that doesn't stop.
All right. What percentage of your abductions do you think you recall?
I would say probably about 15 to 20%. I'm sure it's happened so many times that I can't recall. And I've been lucky enough to recall some of them, but I think most of the time the slate is wiped clean, and I'm not intended to remember.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much. The difference with the guest I have coming on tonight, one, he has no reason, no motivation to be telling the story he's going to tell at all tonight. He's financially well off. He was successful in business, and then, boom, all of this came out of nowhere. And the other difference is he recalls about vividly about 90% of the abduction procedures that were done and what the creatures look like and all the rest of it. So it should be a very instructive evening. Let's go to Tacoma, Washington, and Melvin. You're on the air, Melvin.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All right, well, the reason I was calling was that I was hearing what you were saying about the them going to the moon and how it's been a long time since we've been there. And
yes,
the thing with me is, at the time that we went the first time, the technology was not anywhere near where it is now. And I'm like, I just don't understand how we could have went to the moon. I don't believe we did.
Oh.
You know, and I look at the pictures, and it doesn't add up.
Oh, so you think the whole thing was done in Hollywood?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and the American people will believe whatever's on television, you know. I mean, we've seen many movies with us being on Mars. So,
that's true.
You know, why wouldn't we think we went to Mars already? You know what I mean?
Well, none that claim that we actually did it. We've seen plenty of science fiction, and we've been to Mars and well beyond, sir, but... you know, I'm sorry, I don't... How old are you?
I'm 35.
35. So you don't really remember all of that time personally, do you?
No, I don't. And, you know, my whole argument is, why haven't we been back? If we went once, why can't we go again? And why wait so long to go?
Oh, I share that with you, my friend. I absolutely agree with you. What the hell's wrong with us? But I 100% disagree with your assessment that we did not go. Consider that, folks. That fellow's 35 years old. He doesn't remember our going to the moon, and he should not remember our going to the moon. So as far as he's concerned, baloney, we never went. And of course, there are others who kind of agree with that assessment, that we never really went to the moon, that it was all a big put on. Now, he said Americans will believe anything that's on TV. Huh. I can't argue too much with that. Now, that doesn't mean I believe we didn't go to the moon. But he's right in that statement. Americans pretty much believe it's on TV, boy, it happened. And in those days, that was all the more true. Television then was the Holy Grail. I'll tell you right now, when Walter Cronkite said it, you believed it. So, he had some of it right. His conclusion, in my opinion, is certainly incorrect, but you can't deny some of the rest of what he said. Leroy in Colorado, west of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, hello.
Am I on the line?
You are.
We've had some pretty crazy callers today.
We depend on that here, sir.
Oh, well, I actually have to go back to the first call before I state why I'm calling, but with the cat thing about how you can't have, you know, cats are like potato chips, you can't just have one, I'd have to actually agree with that. I've about...
Okay, hope we caught that back there. Let's go to Charlie in Michigan. Charlie, you're on the air. Hello, Charlie.
Hi.
Turn your radio off.
Okay. Get off.
Off.
Oh, my God.
No, not
I heard you're a cat person.
Just Art Bell.
I heard you're a cat person.
Yes.
I got 22.
You have 22?
22 cats. And they're all fixed and all neutered, and they're just a loving little family here.
I know.
My question
well, with 22,
is,
you better neuter them, because let's see, you could probably have about 110
oh,
in
yeah.
just no time at all. Turn your back, and there'd be 110.
Well, I don't want that. That's terrible.
I don't know how you got to 22.
Okay, sir. My question is, when I was about, I'd say 3-5 years old, I experienced something that I never forget in my life.
Yes.
And I was floating, and I went up my street.
Up your street?
And I made a left turn, and I was floating. I was about maybe 200 feet off the ground.
Uh-huh.
I floated up to my uncle's, went up the creek, checked out the creek where I used to play, went up to my uncle's, and I turned around, made a right turn, put my right hand out, and I turned, and I flew. And I can never forget this experience.
Well, I suppose, so it was a flying dream,
did
really?
Did I die at one time there? I have a very weird family.
Well, many
Nobody
of us...
Nobody tells me nothing, you know?
Uh-huh. Many of us have weird families,
yeah.
Sir. It's an American tradition, I think. Actually, not just America. I think more families than not are, you know, fight and are somewhat dysfunctional. But of course, blood is thicker than water. But basically, bottom line, most families are somewhat dysfunctional. Wild card line. I say that's right. I've done it again. See, I get wound up with what I'm doing. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Very quickly, let's go to Sedona, Arizona. We've got another abductee. Keith, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Art. It's a great pleasure to talk to you. I've seen the Grays face-to-face, and I've got so many stories I hardly know where to start. But the Grays I experienced were a hive mind. They were not individuals, and that's why they're psychically so powerful. And we saw a jet fighter chase a glowing orb across the sky, black helicopters, Russian troops, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Do you remember much about the craft?
Yes, I do. I could tell you all about it. I was beamed up in a blue beam up to a small scout ship, taken up into a large mothership, which appeared to be cigar-shaped, and there were mantis-like beings overseeing it. I've seen the reptilians, too, but in my particular case, it was the Grays with the mantis beings standing much taller over them. And they put an implant in me, and I've recovered this after like 20 years. It took me 20 years of regression. I had hypnotic regression to help me recover the memories of it.
Where was the implant in your
it
body?
It was in my lungs, actually. It was what the best of my knowledge is that we're studying heart and lung function.
Okay.
And also,
did you know what these creatures ultimately, what their motivation for taking human beings is?
Well, it's kind of like a harvest. They're harvesting energy. And the motivation for them is they don't have emotions, and that's part of what they're studying with us. And also, I tend to think they're... not having their race is kind of ending, and they're trying to rejuvenate their race with our DNA.
Well, that's a common thought, certainly. I wish I had more time to spend with you. We've got a break coming up.